So you went back to Trinidad in June of 1940 with your brother John and your mother. Tell us about that journey.
It was very frightening to start with because we had to go down the channel with no escort in order to join the escort and the convoy in the Bay of Biscay. And we weren't allowed to go down to our cabins. We had to stay on the deck with our life belts at the ready. And the ship was utterly crowded with young children, people who were sending their children out of England where they thought safety. And I was then at 16, I think, and responsible for two or three smaller children. And it was quite a business of keeping these children amused on deck with their life jackets on, because we weren't sure then whether we would reach the convoy.
Where did you set out from?
Plymouth.
And once you joined the convoy, what happened after that?
Well, then you had this amazing sight of, as far as the eye could see, either way, were ships of every imaginable size. And round the outside, there would be a destroyer circling and circling, trying to protect us from the U-boats. And on the horizon, I can remember one enormous ship going up. I think it was called the Arandora Star. And that was torpedoed. And at the rear of the convoy, they had a ship that would pick up all the survivors. In other words, you had to keep sailing on your zigzag course and keep to your station. And it was like a sweeper was collecting you when you drifted back in your lifeboats.
Was that the only boat that you saw go down?
I saw one or two others.
And can you describe the Andorra Star going down?
Yes, it was horrific. It was too far away to see any detail, but it was a very big boat. It was a liner. It was quite a famous liner in its day. And the flames just were horrific. And that's all you could see.
And describe the boat that you were in.
It was quite comfortable. We were very crowded. And as I say, full of young children. My mother, who was very clever with playing the piano, she could play any music, both classical and light music, was responsible for having sort of musical gatherings and getting the children to sing. And she said always, she can always remember once, she was sitting with the children all round the floor, and there were many of them, about 90, and she was getting them to sing, and she looked up, and the captain was standing in the doorway with tears streaming down his face. And when she asked him afterwards, he said, well, he just felt, as he stood there with all these children, the responsibility he had. Sorry, I can't cry.
So was your boat a liner, a merchant ship? What type of boat?
I think it was English, because we used to travel on Elders and Fife a lot, backwards and forwards to the West Indies in our childhood. I don't think this was an Elders and Fife boat. It was definitely a passenger boat. Whether we had any other cargo on board, I don't remember. But it wasn't anything very grand. We also had Hamburg American boats we used to travel on. But in that convoy, there was every size and shape of boat you can imagine.
How were all the other people on the other ships English, or were there other nationalities, or what?
I think there could have been other nationalities, but I can't be sure.
And how common were these convoys? Was this happening every week? Was this unusual?
Oh, no. The convoys were going all the time. The worst thing was, at the early part of the war, there were so few escort vessels. We're very, very short of escort vessels. we had, I'm not sure how many, I do remember a destroyer who had to rush, you know, they had all the sort of mechanical things that if they heard what they thought might have been a U-boat, they'd have to rush around the outside of the convoy. They couldn't go through because we were staggered. When each day the captains of each ship had to open an envelope which gave them their course, their zigzag course, and they had to keep to that through all the weathers. And we went through some very, very rough sea, and it was really quite difficult for some of these small ships, because there were some little merchant ships in the convoy, to keep their station. And I remember sometimes you'd look out and it seemed to me that a ship was hurtling at you, only to just at the last minute turn its course and zigzag the other way. And everybody had to keep doing this to try and avoid the torpedoes. Because if they kept their station continuously, this was easier for the U-boats.
Now, you had crossed the Atlantic many times before that journey, but presumably many or most of the other people had done no journey. How, presumably, it must have been quite extraordinary to be going on a journey full of fear as compared to other ones which had been so routine.
Yes, but there were a lot of people on board, families I'd grown up with or knew the families in Trinidad, and these were the children who were all at school like we were, being sent home to their colonial parents. So there were a lot of children who had already crossed the Atlantic many times, but there were some on board who had never been to sea before.
At what point in the journey did you feel safe?
I think only when we really got right into the Caribbean, because I don't think the U-boats had at that time really got that far across the Atlantic. So as we got into the Caribbean, one had relaxed. Also, the weather began to be lovely, and we'd come through quite a lot of storms.
And where did you disembark?
We disembarked alongside in Port of Spain, Trinidad.
Was that the first land that you had reached?
Yeah, we'd been into Barbados before that, and one or two people had got off there, but that's where we got off.
And do you remember your father meeting you?
Yes, I remember looking down from the side, over the side, and seeing my father standing on the quay.